We are tuning into the sounds of the Wave Farm Pond on Saturday afternoon, May 21st. Get a taste of what the weather was like today. You can tune into the Wave Farm Pond anytime at WGXC.org from sunrise to sunset. The microphones at the bottom of the pond in Greene County. I'm Tom Rhodes. You're tuned into All Together Now, a collaborative regional newscast. Today from the studios in Acre of WGXC, we'll hear brand new music from Bobby Previtt and the Visitors from Hudson, and the song of the day from Stephen Merritt and the Magnetic Fields. Plus, we'll hear radio news and local news on All Together Now for Saturday, May 21st.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Acre, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews.
With the local news for Saturday, May 21st, 2016. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here, including links to all the local publications, Twitter feeds, and more at newsroom.WGXC.org. Public News Service has this report.
Albany has joined with dozens of other communities in opposing the Pilgrim Pipeline. This week, the Albany City Council approved a resolution calling the proposed pipeline an environmental risk and a public health hazard. The 178-mile project would carry crude oil from Albany to New Jersey and refined products back. Roger Downs with the Atlantic chapter of the Sierra Club says the resolution sends a clear signal to the pipeline's developers.
They know that they're going to need the approval of the city of Albany by a two-thirds majority, and almost two-thirds of the common council voted in opposition to the pipeline.
Pilgrim Pipeline Holdings, the project developer, says a pipeline would be safer than transporting the oil by rail or on barges down the Hudson River. Several oil trains have derailed around the country, causing massive spills and, in one case, a fire that killed 47 people. But Downs points out that the crude oil is shipped to Albany from North Dakota by rail.
And if you look at the numbers, the proposal will actually increase the number of oil trains coming through Albany, and Albany has already been inundated with these trains.
And he says a pipeline wouldn't necessarily eliminate oil trains and barges traveling down the Hudson Valley. Pipeline projects that in years past may have been rubber-stamped by regulators are now being successfully challenged. Downs credits growing public awareness of the dangers and the alternatives for the change.
I think we're seeing more and more citizens seeing the connection between these pipelines and climate change, and they realize that there is a better energy future ahead of them in renewables.
Last month, the state of New York denied a permit for the construction of the Constitution Pipeline, and another, the Northeast Energy Direct Project, was canceled by its developer. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
Alana Medlac has these reports.
Governor Andrew Cuomo announced May 20th that New York State Department of Environmental Conservation operated campgrounds in the Adirondack and Catskill parks are now open for the summer camping season. The DEC operates 52 campgrounds and 6 day-use areas in the Adirondack and Catskill forest preserves open through Labor Day, with some facilities remaining open during fall foliage and hunting season. Sites are available on a first-come, first-served basis and range from $18 to $28 a night. Amelia Teasdale in the Columbia Paper reports that Chatham Village authorized the formulation of a Chatham Police Bicycle Unit May 12th. The Village Police Department will buy 2 new bikes and have an old one refurbished, with bike patrols starting in July. Quote, I'm looking forward to it, Chief Volkman told the board about the bike unit. I think it gets people talking to officers. Read the full story in the Columbia Paper. On May 19th, there was news on several fronts about Rensselaer County water. First, the Environmental Protection Agency set a new lifetime drinking water health advisory of 70 parts per trillion for human exposure to the chemical PFOA. The Albany Times-Union reports that there are 6 public water systems in New York State, 2 in Rensselaer County, that have detected PFOA in their water supplies in excess of the EPA's new guidance standard. Also, May 19th in Rensselaer County, the State Department of Environmental Conservation declared Taconic, a Petersburg plastics company, a state Superfund site after the factory was linked to PFOA contamination of water supplies there. In January, Saint-Gobain Performance Plastics Plant in the village of Hoosick Falls was also declared a state Superfund site. Read the full story in the Albany Times-Union.
Matthew Hamilton in Capital Confidential reports that State Senator George Amador, Republican from Rotterdam, will run for re-election. Amador beat incumbent Democrat Senator Cecilia Kacik in the 46th Senate District in 2014. Quote, "My priority has been to deliver our fair share of resources to the 46th District in order to properly fund our schools, ease the burden on our taxpayers, invest in infrastructure, and create economic opportunity within every community," unquote, Amador said in a statement. He will face Democrat Sarah Nicoli, who is a farmer and also former director of the Labor Religion Coalition, as well as the Palatine Town Supervisor. The 46th District includes Greene, Albany, and Ulster counties, and Montgomery and Schenectady County, too. Read the full story in Capital Confidential, a Times Union blog. The National Weather Service in Albany says that there is a 30% chance of rain Saturday, mainly after 1 p.m. Should be mostly cloudy with a high near 65. Saturday night rain is more likely between 7 p.m. and 1 a.m. with a low around 49. Sunday, there is a chance of scattered showers afternoon, mostly cloudy with a high near 63 and a low around 49. Sunday night with isolated showers continuing. They could be scattered showers Monday after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it should be partly sunny with a high near 69. You're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported Creative Community Radio.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2011, these are the Ham Nation headlines. We begin with a special report on the Alberta wildfires from Amateur Radio Newsline's Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
A devastating wildfire has hit the Fort McMurray, Alberta, Canada area hard. The fire destruction covers a staggering 328 square miles. Newsline caught up with Amateur Radio Emergency Services Operator Matthew Lewis, VE6JI, who has been working in the Fort McMurray EOC.
We did a call out on Monday when things started getting severe. We made our presence known to the EOC and they accepted us. So Amateur Radio, you know, sits in its little corner, mostly, you know, helping Red Cross, helping Salvation Army food trucks and things like that. It allowed us to set up a VHF station in their parking lot. We had a crossband repeater so that we could use UHF to get to the local repeater. And so we made call outs for our amateurs.
The amateur community responded.
As far as outpouring, huge amount from all over, actually, from the Calgary group and Edmonton group. They also got lots of contacts as well.
Lewis explains how important having an HF ham radio grab-and-go kit can be.
Unfortunately, we had left our houses and including all our gear because we were actually helping out with something else. And so the two of us that actually had portable HF capabilities didn't have our portable rigs with us. We were hoping that things had calmed down, that we'd be able to get a police escort to the house and get the stuff and whatnot and then set up HF, but that wasn't possible. The part that we would like people to know for our little group up here is that even though we weren't used, there's still the possibility in, especially in remote communities, that amateur radio is a necessity in the event of a communications failure, like in the overloading of infrastructure and things like that.
The good news for Lewis, his home was still standing. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
With Dayton Hamvention opening this weekend, there's ongoing speculation about Hera Arena and Hamvention's future there. Hamvention is staying at Hera for the time being. And Hamvention's general chairman, Jim Tiderman, N8IDS, made those assurances in a recent interview on Ham Talk Live with Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
There were queries by our local fair board, Montgomery County Fair Board, who are looking at to replace and have been looking at this for a number of years for their facility downtown. And it just so happened that one of the areas was up around Hera it got turned around to the story that they were going to buy Hera Arena. We have been in contact with the city of Trotwood officials. The spokesperson for that has told us directly that there is no ownership by Trotwood of Hera Arena, which if you heard that, that is has no validity. There is nothing to that. If it's just straight rumor, that is a story. It is not true. The Fair Board itself is doing its due diligence to go out and look for new facilities, venue to where they can have their fair at a new place that they've been looking at for a number of years. So it's just all information gathering. It's got nothing to do with what's going to happen with Hamvention itself. So to alleviate anything else, the first question is there going to be a Hamvention 2017? As far as we are concerned, yes, sir, there will be. Will it be at Hera? Our plans call for that right now. Yes.
You can hear the complete interview with Jim Teiterman on Neil's podcast, Ham Talk Live. It's an easy web address, www.hamtalklive.com. Of course, Newsline's reporters will be at Hamvention, and we'll have more for you on that next week. Finally, another reminder that the nominating period for the Bill Pasternak Young Ham of the Year Award is open through the month of June. More info and the nominating form can be found on the Newsline website under the YHOTY tab. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for over 38 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, Matthew Lewis, VE6JI, Jim Teiterman, N8IDS, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73, and we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo was called out by HBO's John Oliver May 15th for diverting funds meant to maintain and improve the 911 emergency call system in New York. On his Last Week Tonight television show, Oliver also mentioned that New York is one of the few states that do not coordinate their county 911 call centers statewide, And nationwide, Facebook or the Domino's Pizza app can tell exactly where your cell phone is calling from, but 911 operators are not getting that information, and emergency victims are left waiting while responders spend time figuring out where victims are located. Here's Oliver talking about Cuomo's actions on Last Week Tonight, Sunday, May 15th.
What makes this even more frustrating is that almost everyone's phone bill has a line like this on it, which you might assume goes directly to fund 911 centers. But the FCC's fee report showed that since 2008, at least 20 states have diverted those dollars elsewhere, which is probably why, depending on where you live, 911 may be a joke in your town. We are routinely raiding 911 to pay for other things. New York State, which has seen multiple breakdowns in its 911 systems, took in over $185 million in fees in 2014, but then diverted $77 million into the state's general fund, where it could be spent on pretty much anything. And yet, when the governor was asked about this, he blew it off.
Is that something in the budget process that you'll take a look at? Is it right for us to divert this money?
It is not an issue that has come up, and I haven't heard any local legislator raise it. But if it comes up, we'll look into it.
Okay, A, it just came up. B, legislators have raised the issue repeatedly since you've been in office. And C, not diverting money away from 911 is one of those things you shouldn't have to be told not to do. Like siphoning gas out of a fire truck to put in your dirt bike. Oh, look, no one's told me this is wrong, so if you'll excuse me, I'm gonna spin some donuts in that Arby's parking lot.
We'll begin this week's rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the frigid Northwest Arkansas studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this week's rain report. For many hams nationwide, spring is the unofficial beginning of the hamfest season. If you've been to a local hamfest, you have seen a piece of Americana. As some of you hear the following op-ed piece from the Rain Archives, the highways and byways into and out of Dayton, Ohio, will be clogged with those who take in the Dayton Hamvention, May 20th, 21st, and 22nd, the Hamfest of Hamfests that draws more than 20,000 attendees from around the world. Next weekend, as we go to press. More than 20 years ago, a Chicago-area ham, Oren Brand, K9KEJ, put his many years of hamfesting to paper. As you listen to his thoughts, see if you don't find yourself grudgingly agreeing with Oren's observations about what he called the hamfest mentality.
Right at the outset, I will qualify this dissertation by telling you I've been a ham operator since 1957. And I've managed to dabble with many of the facets of our hobby. I've been fortunate to partake in slow and fast scan television, RTTY, AM, SSB, FM, CW, phase modulation, moon bounce, microwave, HF, VHF, UHF, DX, rag chewing, you name it. Nah, no packet, though. I've even toyed with the idea of packet, but haven't done it. But figured I'd spend enough time in front of a computer screen all day as it is. And over the years, I've discovered ham radio has something for everyone, especially for those folks who love to go to ham fests. What? Have I hit a nerve? I'll never forget how I felt at my first ham fest back in the 50s. Don't try to figure out how old I am. I don't even know where it was, except that it was perhaps someplace in central Illinois. There were food stands selling delicious barbecue ribs, Italian beef, hamburgers, fresh sweet corn, and other assorted foodstuffs every normal kid would die for in those days. You could gaze upon row after row of folding tables set up like little communities, almost like dominoes. Looking back now, that first hamfest experience reminds me of town festivals and celebrations where everyone shows up. Each table held the promise of some kind of adventure. There was a table with used night kits from Allied Radio in Chicago. Stuff like an ocean hopper and Space Banner super regen receiver. There was a table full of old Heath kits. There were helicrafters, S-38s of various model designations. You know, the S-38, the S-38C, D, E, the whole shot. There were a lot of old HROs. A few Mint Collins receivers, some WRL Globe Gear, maybe a Globe Chief 90A or a Globe Scout 65 or a Globe Champ 300. Many of my friends and I were novices, while also soon after got a tech license to go along with a novice ticket. None of us ever wanted to be labeled as KN9s. Being a K9 brought us respect, despite the fact that hams in their 30s and 40s still called us short pants. Well, anyway, back to the Hamfest tables and the people who set up all that gear. I remember several Chicago-area guys with tables loaded with Army surplus stuff. Gear like the command sets, BC-458s, 454s, 455s, 348Qs, 1625s. They filled the tables. Dynamotors, PE-103s, they were converted to run this 24-volt stuff, and if it didn't smell of mildew, my friends, it wasn't authentic. The wild thing was that back then, there was no such thing as a handy-talkie. The closest thing to it was a 2-meter transceiver made by the Springfield Company that came with a telephone handset, real classy. Try lugging that thing around. As the years went by, the complexion of some of the gear changed somewhat. You could still see a National NC-300 or two, maybe a few Heathkit AT-20s or DX-35s, and hopefully a DX-40 or two, but never a famous DX-100, heaven forbid. Those infamous Collins KWS-1s were always sold in private deals, as were the Johnson Viking Thunderbolt kilowatts or Viking Rangers and Valiants. But wait! The lights flash, the earth shakes, and we're transformed through years of strife and upheaval. And it's now 1993. And wait a minute. Hold it. What's that? What's that stuff on the table over there? At the Corn Dancers Hamfest. My God, it's an old command set. Complete. With its built-in antenna tuner, so anyone can load up a wire fence or even a screen. Why, there's even a set of extra 1625 tubes. Shh, don't tell anybody. Will you look at that? That's the same guy. The same guy, the same clown, selling that same junk from the late 50s and 60s. He's still alive, still around. I'm sure many of you experience similar happenings. When some of my ham friends and I get together for an evening of dinner and conversation, we often comment that even if any of us haven't attended a hamfest for, say, 20 years or so, we'll still find the same exact people trying to hawk their wares. And we firmly believe that much of that junk on their tables is the same exact stuff that we saw back when we were kids. Now, don't go and get your juices all soured up now about these comments. It's true, and you know it, if you've been around a while. And isn't it amazing how hamfests bring out some of the more, let's say, unusual of our fraternity? I mean, just a couple of years ago, I attended one near Chicago, and sure enough, there they were. A lot of real old-timers I saw when I was a kid, still wearing their hard hats. Ugh, those monster hard hats. Crumbling civil defense stickers affixed to the front. There they were, the ones with the old GE, or tongues-all pocket protectors, with 6 pens, 4 pencils, and a metal protractor tucked away, just in case they need to make an accurate measurement of someone's life. My friend and I also noticed that Hamfest seemed to attract the unwashed, unclean, and oftentimes the outrageous of our fellow amateurs. You will definitely see lots of people with huge bellies, rotting teeth, wearing sweat-stained t-shirts that only cover halfway down while also broadcasting bad breath and the worst BO ever. There are a salt of the earth folks who will plunk down 2 G's for some ultra new gear while their kids pick lice out of their hair. Somewhere else, things will be different. But my friends, nowhere else in the world will you see a human being with 3 handy talkies on his person, with 2 clip-on speaker mics, along with 2 earphones, one for each ear. I honestly saw one clown with 4 HTs all going off at once. "Get over here quick," he yelled into his mini mic. "I think I can get a mint set of Gonsa twins for you off this table I'm in front of for practically nothing." And then someone calls out my name and call letters. And my deepest and darkest fears begin to surface. Someone recognizes me after all. Uh-oh. No, it can't be. He comes running up to me in bib overalls, cowhide boots, 4 pounds of mud and maybe manure under his fingernails. A beard ZZ Top members would love to have, and an extended hand to me. That hand, by the way, probably hasn't had an intimate relationship with a bar of soap in the last 25 years. "Glad to see you, old buddy," he yells over the noise of his dual band talkie. "What you doing here?" Not wanting to completely insult him, I only shake part of his hand. The fingertips, I believe, to be more sanitized than the rest. "I came to see if time really did stand still, as some people claim it does at hamfests," I explained. And then I saw it, out of the corner of my eye, a flash, a ray of sun glancing off its smooth, shiny exterior. Like a whoosh. a chrome Vibraplex semi-auto bug, the Rolls-Royce of CW people worldwide. A long time ago. No electronics here, just straight fist pounding. 599, good luck in the contest, 73. I left this guy in mid-sentence and ran across the dirt path to the table with a guy wearing the old white hard hat. How much, I inquired. $300 because it's got new jeweled movements in it, he replied, not being affected by my teary eyes. All right, he then mumbled. I'll give it to you for $200, and that's that. All the way home, my car smelled of mildew, a reminder I had reacquired some great artifact from my past. And at the same time, understanding I truly visited a place where time warps are for real and the ghosts of ham operators past are alive and well, still selling their junk to kids just like me. Happy scavenging. This is Oren, K9KEJ, for Rain.
The thoughts and musings of an old-timer, Oren Brand, K9KEJ, about what he termed Hamfest mentality, written for Rain more than 20 years ago. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2016 Rain. All rights reserved. Now for all those on the road to, or shortly to be, to the Dayton Hamvention, May 20th, 21st, and 22nd in Dayton, Ohio's Hera Arena, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from all those connected with these Rain reports. And if you hear this before you get to the Hamvention, be sure to put the Rain and Gateway 160-meter radio newsletter booth in your agenda. Inside booth 329. You just might be interviewed. The Rain Report is available 24/7 on therainreport.com, via Twitter at The Rain Report, and somewhere on iTunes.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXE.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXE.org in the community calendar. If you have a press release for All Together Now, send it to news at WGXE.org. And our crack community reporters will see if we can mention your news on the local airwaves on the collaborative 6 p.m. local radio news show, All Together Now.
Thanks, 10-4.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines. John Anderson in DIYmedia.net, after the National Association of Broadcasters Convention in Las Vegas, looks at the big picture with radio. While television broadcasters are about to make a bundle selling off Spectrum, the radio industry is hearing lots of bad news recently. iHeartMedia is staving off angry bondholders over its several billion dollars worth of debt, while the next biggest radio company, Cumulus Media, is fighting off bankruptcy. Emmis may be delisted by NASDAQ in early June, and CBS is spinning off its entire radio division, and might sell. The collapse of the radio conglomerates may mean some major industry sea change, Anderson posits. And future thinkers are wondering if radio is keeping up with multi-platform interactivity, and if cars become driverless, listeners will be even more distracted by thousands of other options. Note, Anderson is on Wavefarm's board. I'm Tom Rowe, reporting for Wavefarm Radio and WGXC. Brand new music from Bobby Previtt and the Visitors from Hudson. You're listening to Radio News About Radio Waves. Headlines from the Ether. Headlines. The Indiana University Libraries announced May 3rd a $25,000 grant from the National Recording Preservation Foundation to preserve rare original recordings of The Orson Welles Show, the live radio series produced beginning September 15, 1941. The university says that internet chatter seems to indicate only 8 of the 19 shows are in circulation, but Indiana U says they will restore 14 original lacquer discs and other supposedly lost recordings. The university will create a website for the recordings where users will be able to stream audio, search Welles' scripts, and access expert commentary. Mike Casey, IU's Director of Technical Operations for the Media Digitization and Preservation Initiative, said they have 324 lacquer discs and about 100 accompanying paper scripts from old radio shows. Quote, most lacquer discs have an aluminum or glass base with a black lacquer coating, he said. Quote, it contains the grooves that carry the sound. This is not a safe way to store a treasure. Lacquer discs are inherently chemically unstable and sometimes fail catastrophically. Quote. This is Tom Rowe for Wavefarm Radio and WGXC.
Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
Welcome to the Public News Service Weekend Newscast. I'm Veronica Carter. Here's a look at what's making news this weekend. Oklahoma's governor has vetoed a bill that would have made abortion a felony. Donald Trump has gotten the backing of the NRA. And nearly half of all cancer cases could have been prevented. Oklahoma's governor has vetoed a bill that would have made performing an abortion in the state a felony. Governor Mary Fallon called it vague and said it wouldn't hold up to a constitutional challenge. The measure would have made performing an abortion a felony and revoked the license of any doctor that performs one, would have also carried a 3-year prison sentence. Not surprising to most, but the NRA is endorsing Donald Trump for president. At the NRA's national convention in Kentucky, Trump called the endorsement a fantastic honor and said he would not let the group down. When he said he would get rid of gun-free zones, he got a big cheer from the crowd. He accused Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton of aiming to abolish the Second Amendment. Consumer advocates and environmental groups are joining forces this weekend for rallies in 36 nations. It's called the March Against Monsanto, and it calls for labeling of foods containing GMOs.
Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and other cities around the state, groups are holding what they call a March Against Monsanto. Karen Stark, co-founder of the group GMOPA, wants labels on these foods to contain the words produced with genetic engineering.
People should know how their food is being produced so they can determine that they want to consume it or not.
The food industry insists GMOs are safe and has vigorously opposed legislation across the country that would require labeling GMO products, saying that would raise prices and confuse consumers. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
Environmental groups applauding the criminal indictment this past week of the company blamed for the massive oil spill in May in Refugio, about an hour north of Santa Barbara.
A grand jury indicted Plains All American Pipeline on 46 counts related to the spill. In addition, one employee is charged with a misdemeanor for not reporting the incident quickly enough. Ashley Blako with the conservation advocacy group Oceana says once oil is spilled, it's impossible to completely clean it up.
Companies that extract these public resources have to be held accountable for the safety of those operations. And when a spill does occur, there's a price to pay to clean up the damage that's done.
Plains All American released a statement saying, while it regrets the accidental spill, its actions are not criminal in nature. The company notes that it has spent $150 million to mitigate the impact of the spill, which occurred after a severely corroded underground pipe owned by the company cracked, sending 140,000 gallons of heavy crude onto the beach. I'm Suzanne Potter.
President Obama is putting more pressure on Congress to fully fund his request to combat the Zika virus.
This is something that is solvable. It is not something that we have to panic about, but it is something that we have to take seriously.
Obama met with health officials at the White House and said he asked Congress for nearly $2 billion in emergency funding to combat Zika last February. He says the government is on track to start developing a Zika vaccine and improve diagnostic testing. The mosquito-borne virus has been linked to birth defects, concerned about Zika growing as summer draws closer. Half of all cancer deaths are from things people could change. That includes quitting smoking, drinking less, and exercising more. A report from Harvard Medical School says 40% of cancer cases in general could be prevented. Just a half an hour of exercise a day could make all the difference. Cancer is the second leading cause of death in the United States. Alzheimer's disease in the state of Washington is the third leading age-adjusted cause of death and kills at the highest rate in the entire nation. Eric Tegetoff has more.
However, state officials are not taking this alarming data lying down. The Dementia Action Collaborative, created by lawmakers in 2014, met for the first time this April. Bob Leroy, head of the Alzheimer's Association and a member of the collaborative, says the group hopes to use available resources to address the disease.
We think we can do a lot by more effectively leveraging existing programs and resources, and that's really where we're going to focus our efforts for the balance of the current year.
Florida falls behind the national high school graduation rate, and the recent proliferation of alternative schools doesn't seem to be helping, according to a new study.
Even though they enroll a small slice of students, the report from Johns Hopkins University finds that charter, virtual, and alternative schools account for a disproportionate share of the high schools with low graduation rates in Florida and nationwide. Study co-author Dr. Robert Balfans says while alternative schools can be a lifeline for some students, that isn't always the case.
But sometimes what happens is we let kids struggle too much and they get too far behind, and then we hope that this other school will fix it. And then it's really challenging because there's just so many high-needs kids concentrated together.
The newly revised Every Student Succeeds Act requires that districts provide research-based help for schools that graduate fewer than 67% of students in 4 years. I'm Mona Shand reporting.
Special Olympics Iowa's biggest competition of the year is happening this weekend.
More than 2,600 athletes, plus their friends, families, and thousands of spectators converge in Ames this weekend for the Special Olympics Iowa Summer Games. Special Olympics Iowa CEO Gary Harm says while the competitions are a main focus of the weekend, something else just as important is experienced by everyone as the athletes first enter the stadium.
And the high-five line and the fist-bump line, you see smiles, you see joy, you see the simplicity that is that which is involvement in Special Olympics Iowa.
Bob Kessler reporting.
You're up to date. I'm Veronica Carter for Public News Service. Member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
National Weather Service in Albany predicts a chance of showers overnight and into Sunday, 40% chance of rain Sunday. Possible thunderstorms after 11 a.m. Mostly cloudy with a high near 68 Sunday. Low around 50 Sunday night with 20% chance of rain. Monday, there's a 30% chance of rain with a high near 72 and a low around 52. Tuesday, again, 40% chance of rain otherwise partly sunny with a high near 68. You're listening to 90.7 WGXC. Many events going on in the WGXC listening area still this weekend. Drop Forge and Tool in Hudson is having a block printing on fabric workshop Sunday, May 22nd from 10 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. The Mountaintop Arboretum is having a forest immersion walk Sunday, May 22nd at 10 a.m. That's in Tannersville at the Mountaintop Arboretum with Executive Director Joan Kutcher leading the way with a tea at the end at the Washington Irving Inn. Gideon's Knot continues at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill. That's at 2 p.m. Sunday afternoon. Time and Space Limited host Edgar Chiari demonstrating how the brain can be tricked into believing it is experiencing a live performance when it's actually hearing a recording. Here, acoustician Edgar Chiari, 2 p.m. at Time and Space Limited in Hudson, Sunday, May 22nd. At Upstate's Artists Guild in Albany, Free Cake for Every Creature, Russell the Leaf, Eric Savage, Bitter Pills, and Teenage Halloween perform at 4:30 p.m. on Lark Street in Albany. And at 533 Warren Street in Hudson, Sunday, May 22nd, Flandrew Flinesburg, IDM Theftable, Spreaders, Matt Lusak, Delta, and HSVB are all performing at 533 Warren Street at 8 p.m. Sunday, May 22nd. Just a few of the things going on around the WGXC listening area. Later in the week, John Mueller will be at the Shaker Heritage Society in Albany on Monday, May 23rd. Aaron Dessner, Lisa Hannigan, Patrick Higgins, Buchan Gase, and DJ Scott Devendorf are at Club Helsinki in Hudson Wednesday, May 25th, with a fundraiser for Hudson's Good Food for Hudson. That's at 7 p.m. Wednesday, May 25th at Club Helsinki in Hudson. Next weekend, Friday, May 27th, Rick Warren and Marilyn Miller perform at the Main Street Public House in Philmont, Friday, May 27th at 8 p.m. Mountaintop Arboretum has a garden fair Saturday, May 28th. New works from Gabe Brown, Stephen Carew, Isabel Piazza, and Joseph Yeddo are at the Thompson Giroux Gallery in Chatham Saturday, May 28th. And Stephen Bloom and Kaylin Rock perform at the Spotty Dog Books and Ale Saturday, May 28th. In Hudson, check the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information about all these events and many, many more.
Next, it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Today's Song of the Day comes from Hudson-based composer and singer Stephen Merritt and his band The Magnetic Fields. This is You Must Be Out of Your Mind.
You think I'll run, not walk to you. Why would I want to talk to you? I want you crawling back to me. Turned off, turned on.